Welcome to Peak Tales, a conversation about chromatography. Now here's your host, John.
Hey, Peak Tales listeners, welcome back. This is season 3 of the Peak Tales podcast. Yeah, I can't believe that we've already seen 2 seasons behind us, but we are certainly going to continue to provide you great content. And take a listen to today's episode. Listen on through the end. We will have a special promotion code for you, the loyal listeners. So get set and get ready, because here we go. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Peak Tales podcast. This is John. Once again, I am joined with, joined by Darren Decker. Darren is an applications engineer and specialist, all things GC and GC columns. So he is going to talk to us today. We're going to be talking about selecting the best inlet liner. So hello once again to you, Darren. How are you?
I'm well, and you know, even though I'm really a GC columns guy, you find out you end up learning a lot about the inlet, right? Because that's where all the problems are. That's where they start. That's where they end, because there's more things that don't go through a GC than do. And I've been saying that for 30 years or more, right? And so, yeah, I think this is a great idea. Let's talk about why we pick the liner we do. You know, at a high level, I don't think we can get down too deep. There are some documents out there that will go into more and more details, but I think this is a great idea. So you want me to just start, John?
Sure. Start at the beginning.
Okay. So I like to start. I like when we talk about how do I pick the right liner, it's why do we have a liner? I think that's the best place to start. So why do we have a liner? Why is it called the liner, right? It's lining the hot metal body of the injection port, because that's going to kill your sample in so many different ways. So the first thing is we got to have something that lines the hot metal body of the injection port. And it's got to be able to take those temperatures. It's got to not add any reactivity to the system, because these things are going to be going in as a liquid and vaporizing. So we can't have them breaking things down. So it turns out that all of our liners work that way, right? They all fall under that umbrella. So first and foremost, it's to protect the sample. What's the next thing? I got to turn a liquid into a gas. Okay, so how do I do that? I got to add thermal energy to the sample. And that's the liner surface does that for me. And this is why you can get into some interesting surfaces, right? Whether we put in a swirly whirly at the bottom, or some dents in the liner, or we put a cup in there, or whatever we put in there is to help that volatilization, because there are different things that volatilize at different temperatures or under different thermal energy, if you will. So we can either crank up the temperature, which can get a little dangerous, or we can add more stuff in there that's hot in order to help the thermal mass. Now, the downside of doing that to elucidate better vaporization, because we got things that are really volatile, things that aren't so volatile, we got to get everything volatilized, because if it doesn't get into the gas stream, let's say at 450 degrees Celsius or less, which is kind of the max temperature I've seen anybody running their inlet, then it's not going to be something we can do by GC. So we got to get it to that temperature. But now when I start adding thermal mass to that liner, it reduces the volume. Well, what do I care about that? Well, different volumes. Well, when I make a liquid into a gas, it changes volume. It expands rapidly, anywhere from 100 to 1,000 times its current volume, depending on what it is. And incidentally, water's the worst one for this. And this is why I think so many people have problems with water. Is when it vaporizes, it creates like 1,200 times its volume. And if you put a microliter in there, it turns into 1,200 microliters, and none of our liners have that much volume. So one thing we do recommend is try to inject water at lower temperatures if possible. That will help. But also just try to do it with less volume. Use less liquid so you don't run into that problem. We still haven't really figured out which liner we're going to use, but this is why we pick the liner we do. The next thing to talk about probably is glass wool, right? The glass wool thing is all over in our liners, and people say, okay, why do we use the glass wool? Is that to filter out all the garbage? Well, no, that's not what it's there for. It's for thermal mass, like we were talking before. It does happen to do that, though. A lot of the garbage will get stuck in that glass wool, not get on our gold seal. Maybe we won't have to change it out as often, and that's a good thing. And then the next question is, okay, Darren, do I want the glass wool in the bottom, the middle, or the top? And I always say, yes, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me, but you don't want it to move. And so some of these liners will put some things in place to make sure the glass wool doesn't move. And I don't think it's going to move, but we just don't want it to. The biggest issue here is to make sure the size, the placement, and the density or the mass of it is the same. Because if I put in my next liner, because it's going to get dirty, that's the problem in GC, then I got to make sure that the next liner is exactly or very, very similar to the last liner, or I could start getting different results. And so the size, the placement, and the mass is critically important. This is why you're going to hear about our latest liners, these fritted liners. And whether you have the frit in the bottom or the frit in the middle or whatever you have that frit, we can really control the size, the porosity, the mass of that frit and help ourselves with precision. So that's kind of the latest wave in liners. Other features. The tapers. We got tapers at the top, tapers at the bottom. Why? Well, what happens when I take a volume of gas and from the existing size of the liner and then put it through a very small taper? Well, the velocity of the gas speeds up through that area. And so if I put that taper at the bottom of the liner, I'm hoping to focus the sample onto the column. If I put that taper at the top of the liner, I'm hoping to prevent backflash or injection overload, the sample escaping the top of the liner, getting on my inlet, and then causing me problems in the future. We often call that ghost peaks, or if you want to be more politically correct, bonus peaks. They're nobody wants them, but it's something you shouldn't have, basically, right? And then as far as the rest of the features of the liners, they're there for a reason, but that doesn't necessarily make it the best liner for your application. I will say this, though. We have splitless liners and split liners. And then we have a family of liners used for special injection techniques, Coulon column, PTV. And those are going to be specifically called out. So I don't really want to get into the fringe liners, but there are two families of liners that we see, you know, 90%+ of our customers using. And that would be the split and the splitless liners. Now, it's usually okay to use a split liner in a splitless application. In other words, there's no real red flags there, but there is a red flag when you try to go from splitless in a split application. The splitless liners have a larger OD, outside diameter. They fill more of the inlet. And they do that on purpose so that when you are doing splitless injection, that you don't get sample going anywhere other than right on the column. And a split liner is slightly smaller outside diameter. And typically we're using higher flows through those inlets in order to put the sample on there nice and quick. And so it's not as critical that it be further out. In fact, we don't want it to be too tight to the inlet because we want the excess flow to be able to escape easily. So those are kind of the only gotchas you can really have there. In other words, what I'm saying, John, is sometimes we see people using split liners or splitless liners in a split application. That's a big no-no. And sometimes we see using split liners, believe it or not, in a splitless application, not always a no-no. In fact, I had one customer down in the oil patch where I live. I live in the Houston area and lots of oil refineries and things like that. They were taking their liner and they definitely had it upside down. And I tried to point that out to them that was incorrect. And they said, oh no, we've tried it both ways. This is the way we really like it. So how can you argue with that, right? But at the end of the day, liners, there is a purpose. We've got a brochure, and I know you can put that in the notes. We did that on our last podcast that will go into more and more details of why use this liner versus that liner. But at the end of the day, whatever liner's working for you, that's the liner you should be using. And then if it says Agilent somewhere on the packaging, then we know we have the right liner, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really interesting. I mean, I've been in this industry a long time, probably as long as you. And I've never really realize the importance, right? You think of, like, you've got to start, you can rack your brain with columns and methodology and flows and all of this stuff, but something as simple as a liner, there's so much going on there, right? That can make such a difference. So it's a great place to start. And like you said, we have resources that we'll link to in the show notes that can get people more information. Certainly there are folks like yourself, Darren, that are available to talk to people over the phone. And we have a very deep bench here at Agilent of technical specialists that are available, just to pick up the phone and talk with you about things. So we certainly ask our listeners to take advantage of that. And that's one of the reasons why we've been one of the leaders in this industry for forever, right? Since the industry was created. But with that, Darren with one R, so I don't get teased on that anymore. I want to thank you. And I know we will look for other opportunities to bring you on to talk more about GC and GC columns. So thanks so much, Darren. Okay, thank you for listening to this episode. I promised I'd be back with a special promotion code for loyal listeners. I'll have that to you in just 1 minute. But I did want to mention, as we have launched into season 3, we do need your feedback. So send an email to peaktales, all one word, peaktales, at agilent.com. with suggestions for episodes, and we'd be more than happy to look them over and get your question on the show. Okay, so here's the promo code that I promised. It is 1599 is the promo code, and that is available in North America only, and that will give you a discount on some chemistries and supplies. And there are limitations and instructions that apply. You can check with your sales rep or online. Okay, that's all we have for now. And please make sure that you subscribe to the Peak Tales podcast so you never miss an episode. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Peak Tales. For more information on what was discussed today, contact your local Agilent representative or go online to agilent.com.